Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
You are listening to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about this having a Star Trek podcast situation they've gotten themselves into. I'm one of your hosts, Benjamin R. Harrison.
I'm the other host, Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
Doing all right. It's a snow day for me, Ben.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, doesn't happen too often.
Snow in Seattle. That's like once every few years kind of a situation, right?
Yeah, it feels good. Sort of shut the whole city down. No one's driving. No one's going to work. It's pretty great.
With any luck, there'll be a rampantly viral video of cars unable to obtain traction on a hill crashing into each other.
Well, the Benny Hill people need their music money.
And
you know, it's not cheap to license that song when you're showing a viral cars smashing into other cars on an icy street video. So I'm happy to support them.
Yeah, Benny Hill's estate stays in comfortable clothes because of the occasional snow in Seattle.
That's a cause I don't mind supporting. I mean, ours is a show that supports the occasional cause. I think we can put the Benny Hill estate on that list.
Adam, our contest is still going.
Oh yeah?
Yes. The one we thought up last episode, still happening. We are making a big push to 1,000 iTunes reviews in the US iTunes store before the year is out. And all you have to do is write a review, wait for it to show up on the Greatest Gen iTunes page. Take a screenshot and email it to drunkshimoda@gmail.com, and you could win a t-shirt and a poster from our recent tour.
A prize power pack. I was trying to summon, like, morning drive DJ host voice, and I'm sorry, I couldn't quite get there.
Yeah. That's why those guys get so much money, is they can muster that kind of energy at, like, 4:30 a.m.
That's not me. It's 9 a.m. my time, and I don't have that kind of energy.
Yeah. Well, do you want to pour the small amount of energy you have left into this episode?
This episode that is not deserving of podcast fluid. It is season 4, episode 20, Cupid.
The entrepreneur is going to be hosting an archaeology conference, which is got Captain Picard pretty excited, but in his anhedonic way, he can't just enjoy himself. He has to stress himself out by working on his keynote speech that he's going to make to the assembled dignitaries, and he's toiling away on this speech in his ready room, and Troy comes in, and I thought this was kind of a cool scene because Picard puts on uncharacteristic vulnerability in front of her, you know?
Tomorrow I'm going to be addressing some of the greatest scientific minds in the Federation. Switzer, Clarktown, Droff, McFarland. Giants in the field of archaeology. Compared to them, I'm just an enthusiastic amateur.
He kind of admits that he's stressing out in a way that I don't think he usually lets slide.
Well, the last time that he let that slide, she made him go on vacation. So maybe this is sort of a reverse Jinx situation where he really wants to go on vacation and get out of this task, and Troy just won't send him there.
Yeah.
I feel like Captain Picard would be a really bad college roommate to have. Like, the overstudier, the stress case, never wants to party.
Yeah.
Always making you feel bad for wanting to party.
Right. When you put on some music, you just hear him do like a deep, beleaguered sigh in the corner, you know, at his desk.
Guys, could you keep it down?
Yeah. I have a big quiz in the morning.
Can we talk about how he's studying, too? Like, I think we need to talk about the size of his monitors, specifically. Yeah. On his desk, he has, like, the single 15-inch iMac. Mm-hmm. And then in his hand, he's got, like, the tiny... He's got, like, the big iPhone. He doesn't even have the mini iPad. Is that a really efficient way for him to be studying?
Yeah, he's really hunched over, too. I mean, he's squinting at... He's not a young man. His eyesight can't be great.
I don't know if you've been in a corporate workplace lately, but they are all about the ergonomics. Like,
yeah.
They will fucking fire you if they catch you working non-ergonomically.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to need to chain you to a standing desk and make sure that you're...
Here's a couple of bowling gloves for your wrists. we're going to need you to get up every 10 minutes, even though you're not a smoker.
Are you sure those aren't archery gloves, Adam?
Hmm. Not sure.
Well, this conversation goes on perhaps a little bit too long. And
are you talking about ours?
This whole podcast goes along perhaps a little too long. Overstays its welcome. Doesn't leave him wanting more.
No.
And Picard heads back to his quarters where he dims the lights and he's... about to put on his deep V and hit the sack when he notices a Horgon sitting on the coffee table and is immediately gripped with a powerful erection. It's Vash. Vash is here.
Vash, who has somehow achieved access to what should be one of the most secure places on the ship.
Well, there's no locks.
Yeah, I guess not. Did you think that she brought the Horgon? I thought that was the captain's personal Horgon from the planet.
I don't think he would ever be so crass as to have one in his quarters.
As to display it openly?
I think she brought that shit.
The captain occasionally will host a breakfast in his quarters. You don't want the Horgon out. It sends the wrong message.
Yeah. You don't want Bev getting frisky.
You think Riker has like tables held up by Horgons? Like like stacks and stacks of them?
There's a whole cargo bay on deck 12 just full of fucking Horgons.
There's a poster on the wall of a Horgon wearing a sweatshirt that just says college on it.
A Horgon leaning against a Lamborghini.
Yeah. Oh man.
The scene ends with Vash and Picard kind of moving in toward each other. And then we get the title sequence.
The title sequence of, like, the Enterprise going into a cave.
Yeah.
And like, warp cores pumping.
Yeah. We come back, and Picard has, like, I don't know how Patrick Stewart did this, but his performance definitely has a freshly fucked-ness about it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's swinging his arms a little more than he usually does.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And he's like...
real chill.
Having a nice continental breakfast with Vash when the doctor in like a drop shoulder sweater comes in. I feel like she probably like pulled this out of one of the trunks that Wesley left behind.
Yeah, all of the Crushers really like a triple X sweater, don't they?
They really do. It's a good look on a Crusher.
The Crusher collection. The Crusher collection is just a model wearing a giant sweater basically around their waist.
Yeah, Crusher comes in and she does not play this cool at all.
I'm sorry I'm late. Oh.
No.
She is not pleased to find another woman sniffing around the captain's quarters.
Well, who plays it worst is Picard, who plays the guilty party right off the jump.
Dr. Beverly Crusher, this is, Vash. She's a friend of mine from the Archaeology Council.
I didn't mean to interrupt. The captain and I often share morning tea together.
Yeah. It really makes me wonder, like, what their arrangement is, because it's long been implied that it's a little bit more than professional and platonic, but it's never actually more than headcanon, right? Like, they never get to a smooch or anything like that.
Picard spends so much time with Riker over the course of his career, I can't believe that there's not a moment in 10 Forward or whatever where Picard would turn to him and go, like, how do you do that with Troy? Like, how are you just cool like that? Because I can't seem to hold it together around Beverly.
Yeah, it's weird. She's super salty that Vash is there. Vash is pretty chill about the whole situation. But the deal is that Beverly has never heard word one about this woman, and I think is offended that, you know, even if she's just a confidant of the captain's, that she just walked into a room that smells like sex and croissants, and this is a total surprise for her.
I love that that late 90s song, that Marcy Playground song, Sex and Croissants.
Yeah. You know when that music cue drops in a movie, you're in for a 90s treat.
You know Julia Roberts is going to walk around the corner. And Hugh Grant.
All the colors are going to be saturated.
Yeah.
All the lighting is going to be super flat. I'm not really sure how this works out, but somehow the way this scene resolves is with Beverly agreeing to take Vash on a tour of the ship. And so they go down to 10 Forward. Bev goes off to snag a couple of glasses of Tang for them to start their day with. And Riker is in there, like, drinking. He's in there, like, drinking his ass off. And he walks up to Vash and tries to lay the Mac down.
Eternity never looked so lovely.
Excuse me?
Riker is drinking, like, the fruit punch of flirtation.
Oh, yeah.
And this got me thinking, like, have we talked about whether or not Riker's drinks might be telegraphing his mood at a particular time, the way that someone, like, crams a colored handkerchief in their back pocket to telegraph, like, what sort of sex stuff they're into.
Yeah. Oh, Riker's drinking something yellow, so he's in the mood for water sports.
Right, exactly. Uh-oh, Riker's drinking hot chocolate.
Hey! Sprechen Sie Deutsch, Riker?
This scene is hilarious, because it plays off of what I think the viewer knows and wants out of a Will Riker in a scene like this, which is just an unabashed willingness to flirt with anyone. Like,
yeah,
the doctor gets called away, and she's like, oh, Will will continue this tour. And with a raised eyebrow, Will is like, yes, I will. I don't have any plans. I had plans to fuck.
Let's start the tour by going down this hallway, then coming back out of this hallway, then going back down it, then coming back out of it, and then going back down it again.
Riker's like, should I get you a red beverage, or should I just put down a towel?
Oh,
that's a keeper.
We're going to get some letters at him. We're going to get some letters.
Got to use that letters drop.
Riker has fallen into the same trap as Dr. Crusher. Picard has not told anybody about the babe he met on Risa. And so he takes her on the rest of the tour. And there's like an awkward scene where he like walks her onto the bridge and is kind of introducing her around. She curls up in the captain's chair like a sexy kitty. And Picard walks on deck and is like, well, enough of that. Fun and games time is over. Time to be a professional Starfleet crew. And
a little bit of a boner lean out of him, though.
Yeah. You see Worf in the background, though, just going, yes. And so business continues. And there's a brief scene in 10 Forward where Worf gives his Yelp review of Vash.
Nice legs.
Before human.
Worf doesn't have much to do in this episode until later, but good God, like, what few lines of dialogue he has, he just fucking crushes, like batting practice. He is just, he's just the worst.
Yeah.
Have we ever seen Worf comment on the physical attractiveness of anyone, let alone a human woman, let alone a special guest star?
Let alone how good the parking is?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Worf, that's an HR violation, buddy.
Yeah, he says that in Mixed Company, too, right?
Yeah, like, he does.
I feel like it's like Troy and Geordi standing around. He's like, nice knockers, shitty parking.
Even Geordi's like, whoa, dude. Really?
Over the line!
This is not the moment where he begins his speech, right? They're in 10 forward for another reason.
Yeah, that's it's like the kickoff party or something. And Picard winds up back in his ready room, back to toiling over his script for his speech, and this is like the 12 or 13 minute mark, Adam.
Yeah. And this is a third of the way through the episode.
We get a swish sound effect, and who should be leaning in the captain's chair but our good friend Q.
Jean-Luc, it's wonderful to see you again. How about a big hug?
Did this surprise you, Ben? Did you think after 20 minutes maybe Q wouldn't show up in a Q-titled episode and you might have gotten away with one?
Yeah, I was excited. You know, I was especially excited because I was looking at this episode and I was like, this is shaping up to be a really interesting episode. Like, we definitely haven't gotten to the inciting incident yet.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of the captain, you know, who cultivates a detached persona for professional reasons, having a woman on board who he loves very much and doesn't care about that persona and the damage she is doing to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was rewriting the script in my head the second Q showed up. I was like, what if instead of Q, they, like...
did anything.
I was thinking, so they're in orbit of this planet where there's this interesting archaeological site, but they can't go to it because it's forbidden for outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
What if they crash-landed a shuttlecraft near there, and it's Vash and the captain, and, like, the captain wants to do the right thing and admit that they've been in this site, and Vash is like, no, let's just slip out, like a difference of cultural values kind of thing would have been a really interesting way to take this. Like, just, I don't know, there's so many interesting things could have happened. And instead...
You don't want to blow your budget on that kind of setup, Ben.
Instead, the Q's aim here is to thank Captain Picard for whatever the fuck happened in the last Q episode. And he decides that the thing that Captain Picard wants most is to do a heroic act to win Vash's heart. Or something. And so...
That checks out. Can we talk about Q's hair for a moment? When he shows up? Like, Q can make himself look like anything. Or anyone. He takes the form of John DeLancey, as he does.
He chose Jerry Seinfeld hair.
I wrote down, he went with Steve Guttenberg hair, which is really like business in the front and casual Friday in the back.
Yeah.
It's a little bit poofy. Poofier than we're used to.
Yeah, it's like early Seinfeld.
Where is this episode on the timeline of Seinfeld episodes? Like, I wonder if it tracks. Like, is this episode occurring at the same time as season one or two Seinfeld?
I guess maybe, yeah.
We could do that research, but we won't.
I leave it to the viewers. I'm hoping that somebody can look into that.
You know what? If you give us that information, that also qualifies for a prize pack. If it's randomly chosen.
Oy. But please leave reviews, because we want to get to 1,000. That would be really cool. So Q gets this idea, and there's not much else that happens in the first half or so of this episode. But the captain starts giving his hotly anticipated keynote address, and as he is doing it, silly hats start appearing on the heads of all of the crew members in attendance, and eventually Picard appears before the assembled group in a Deep V Robin Hood costume, and then they all find themselves in Sherwood Forest. One of the dumbest plot twists that has ever been conceived in television history.
We're in mid-December right now, Ben. This is peak gift-giving season we're talking about.
Mm.
I feel like Q's gift is a gift for Q. This is not a gift for Picard. You know? Like, he's putting it out there that this is all about Picard and Q's sort of great gratitude for getting him back in the collective. But this is what Q wants. This is not what Picard wants. Bad gift.
Very,
I don't get it.
It's very weird, and also, like, I feel like the executive producer is sitting in his office, and one of the writers comes in and goes, like, God, like, I've been thinking about Robin Hood a lot lately. You've got the new Kevin Costner movie coming out. You've got, there's just a lot of excitement about Robin Hood right now. I would love to work it into an episode. And the producer's like, all right, but you really got to, like, justify it. It can't just be some dumb holodeck excuse. And the writer went off. And then the executive producer is, like, back in the office, like, 3 days later, extremely drunk and just approving scripts without reading them. Looks pretty good to me.
Like, the writer began with Worf's I Am Not a Merry Man line reading and then wrote outward from there. Oh, and what about this, Ben? How about we give Geordi the guitar? The back half of this episode is a fucking nightmare.
It's so stupid.
Not even Kevin Costner could redeem a storyline like this. If Costner couldn't do it, what makes them think that this show could?
It is so crazy. And it's like, the twist to it is like, what if instead of Robin Hood saving Maid Marian, and you know they set it up where Vash is Maid Marian and Picard is Robin Hood, and he has to like rescue her, except
don't forget Data as Friar Tuck,
with like weird circuit lines on his bald patch. And I guess like instead of Robin Hood rescuing Maid Marian, it's the Merry Men have to rescue Robin Hood and Maid Marian is like the big fucking interesting twist they put on the story. But it's like, who gives a shit? Who cares at all about fucking Robin Hood?
Well, their way of fucking forcing us to care is by Q repeatedly saying that the stakes are high and that people can get killed in this scenario.
Yeah.
He's like, blood's going to be spilled, real blood, and I'm not going to stop it. And that is supposed to raise the stakes enough for us to care about this terrible story.
I wondered something in this.
It's like, you know, I hate the holodeck dress-up stories.
Yeah.
But at least there's an element of fun there that I felt was just totally lacking in this whole Robin Hood scenario. None of this was fun or funny. Yeah. It just felt camp.
That's something that occurred to me as well, and it made me wonder if Picard had been written off of the show in the Borgs episode, and we were watching a series that was now starring Captain Riker.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what those Q episodes would have been like, because I kind of feel like Riker as a character is more receptive to the appeals that Q makes.
Yeah.
Like, the thing with Picard is that he doesn't like fun at all. So putting him in a scenario like this, he's just going to, like, business out of it.
Yeah, I think Riker, a Captain Riker, would take Q up on his offers more often than Picard certainly does.
But that would also be interesting, right? Like, it'd be like, cool, you're going to give me a gift? Rad. Step on Rake.
This is also the problem that we ran into when Barclay became super intelligent, which was, like, none of the crew knows how to accept a gift this big. Like... a great gift that Q could have given Picard is another trip to the other side of the galaxy to see something amazing.
Yeah.
But that's not the gift he's giving.
Yeah, meet some people from the Dominion.
Right. Can't do that. We would much rather burn up our budget on a castle set and a bunch of thrift store Robin Hood costumes.
Did this castle set look familiar to you at all?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be good trivia. Because the set's too good to just build and destroy. You know it probably still exists.
Yeah.
I wonder if they wrote the episode around the availability of a set. Like, hey guys, you'll never believe it. Stage 42 has a fully outfitted, like, castle and Sherwood Forest setup. They're gonna keep it up for, like, an extra week. They say we can use it, but we need to come up with a story.
Right. It's a, it's like...
It's story of convenience is what it is.
Yeah. Both bottle episode and not bottle episode.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease. Help me more, you'll have to go again.
Anyways, the captain attempts to save Vash. Vash, like, I would say that Vash in this scenario is more interesting than anything else, which is not, like,
absolutely
a high bar to clear.
And in one of the great surprises in Star Trek character writing history, like, Vash is self-sufficient and, like, getting her own self out of trouble and is, like, great.
Yeah, she's, like, she's very confident in her ability to solve any predicament she finds herself in. And so she, you know, is immediately working on doing a con job on the, like, guy of whatever, guy of Gallipoli character. What's the guy's name?
I don't know. The Duke of Ginger? Duke Ginger Snap?
Yeah, she's conning Duke Gingersnap right off the bat. Like, she works out where they are and what's happening really quickly.
Yeah.
And it, like, she's got her own plan. Like, essentially, Picard is fucking her shit up the second he shows up inside the castle. And I don't know. She's ready to stay there and, like, fight it out for herself rather than get executed with Picard and his stupid crew.
She's making decisions completely independently of Picard and anyone else. And I feel like if the crew wasn't there, she would be just fine.
Yeah. And she, you know, when they have their big swashbuckling action scene at the end and they all go home safe for whatever reason, she's like totally impressed Q. Like, Q is as intrigued by Vash as he's ever been by Picard. And there's this final scene where Picard is hanging out in the ready room and he's visited once more by Vash and Q, and they're in
stirrups for some reason.
They're in, like, colonial explorer costumes with pith helmets and riding boots and jodhpurs.
Back when you'd go to a Banana Republic in a mall and they'd have that Jeep crashed out front.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of fake palm trees inside.
Yeah.
Boy, that store is so different now. The scene is about trying to make this writerly case that Vash and Q are, like, two sides of the same coin. Like, the things he loves in Vash are the things that he hates about Q.
He's devious and amoral and unreliable and irresponsible and definitely not to be trusted.
Remind you of someone you know?
As a matter of fact, it does.
And it's just, like, the most hollow, brain-dead ending to a story that started so strong. I'd say the first 12 minutes of this are as strong an opening as we've had for an interesting episode about character. And it is just a fucking... You're right. It's like a three-ring circus after that. And it ends on the kind of resolution that somebody that's extremely high would make.
I wonder if these were two separate scripts that got mushed together. I wonder if the beginning was written by someone else, someone different from the end. And maybe the person who wrote the beginning didn't have an end to their script, and the person who wrote the end didn't have a beginning to it, and they just sort of sutured them together.
Either that, or one person was writing it the entire time and got bonked on the head when they got into Act Two.
People either love or hate this episode. Like, the feelings are very strong about it. People were relishing the idea of us reviewing this episode before we got to it. So that begs the question, Ben, did you like it? Was its first half redemptive enough for you to push it over the top?
No, I don't like it. I think it's such a bizarre misfire in a season that has had so few genuine misfires. And the goodness of the first act is so overshadowed by the badness that it just feels like a terrible opportunity lost. And I regret not having vetoed it. How about you?
This episode makes me think about how intentional it is to portray people who do serious work in a fun light as an intentional thing. Mm-hmm. Like, must you make fun of your crew in an episode a season? Like, do we have to have one of these all the time? Because I really like serious sci-fi, and I like when the stakes are high. And, like, I wonder if this is something that I wonder if this isn't just a good story from their perspective versus, like, an actual story technology that they're deploying. Like, well, we have to lighten the mood now, guys. We can't just do hard sci-fi for 28 episodes. Like, where are we going to put the fun episode? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I mean, like, in those earlier seasons, we joked a lot about them kind of challenging people to ever watch the show again.
Yeah.
Episode after episode was like, you're a fucking nerd and we know you're coming back for more, even though this is ridiculous. Like,
this feels like that tone. This feels like a
totally
fuck
does.
You.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like, we're getting toward the end of this season now. And I believe we still have a Lwaxana episode coming down the pike, which is crazy to me. Like, I think we talked also about how the highs maybe are not as high in season four, but the lows are not so low. This is like a spike in the fucking ground.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, like, the time to stop this episode from happening is when someone in the room says, but we are doing a yearly Lwaxana episode, right? Like, we don't have to do this, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. No, I did not like this episode, Ben. Not that you asked. But that's the part in the show where we talk about things like that, though.
The only way I could possibly brighten my mood is by checking for a priority one message. Should we see if there's any coming in?
Sure, let's do that.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first priority one message comes from Rita, and it's for Craig. Thank you for being the best brother and for introducing me to this fantastic podcast. Aren't you glad I made you watch all that Star Trek when we were kids? Don't forget your Hot Pockets on Christmas Eve, and no matter what anyone tells you, on every Christmas tree, there are four lights! Love you lots. May we be gaming and nerding buddies forever.
Aww.
That's a beautiful message.
Nice line reading on that four lights line. Well done.
I can't remember. Are there four or is it five?
I guess we'll never know.
Yeah.
Do you have any fun food traditions on Christmas Eve? Or whatever holiday Eve you celebrate?
I do. I like to cook a fine fat goose.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Where do you even get a goose? Oh, you're in New York City. They have those at bodegas there.
Well, I usually do Christmas in California, and there are butcher shops that will sell you a goose.
Wow.
They're a little bit pricey and challenging to cook because they produce a lot of fat when you're cooking them, but the trick is you put potatoes underneath and the potatoes cook in that fat, and they are so fucking good.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh man, you just blew my mind.
You gotta get involved, dude.
Holy shit. I'm gonna get on that goose.
Gotta get a fine fat goose this Christmas. Or Hanukkah.
Wow.
There's no teaching in Judaism that says you can't dine on goose for Hanukkah.
Turkey is such a garbage fowl that, yeah. Like, I just want to straight up replace it with goose now.
Well, that's the thing, Adam. A goose is all dark meat. Even the breasts are dark meat on a goose.
No way.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, man.
When Riker wants goose, he's drinking that hot chocolate. Our second priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Kevin Mick.
Kevin MC?
Kevin MC on the ones and the twos.
Yeah.
Who is this message for? Well, Ben, it's for you, me, and all viewers.
Whoa.
Message goes like this. Thanks for the great show, guys. I'm sorry for never contributing dollar signs before, so here's 100 scarves in an attempt at penitence. To all viewers, I challenge you to make a resolution in 17 to support this show. Just think, if we all pitched in $10 a month, maybe we could start getting some quality out of it. Oh, boy. Kevin Mick, you're not wrong. He goes on to say, I kid. Thanks, A and B, for all you do. Happy New Year. Thanks, aww, Kevin Mick.
That's really sweet. That is... So, I went on a little bum out about not getting a priority one message a couple episodes ago, and I think that this priority one message was actually booked and on the calendar after I had recorded that, but before that episode aired. So Kevin like predicted something and has made a strong challenge.
This is a Kevin that believes in a good kind of benevolence.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing the right thing and inspiring others to do something good.
He's a man of special conscience, just like me. But unlike me, he uses that conscience for good and not genocide.
Very true, Kevin. Well, if you're interested in joining the ranks of all Kevins everywhere... Wander on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personal messages are $100. Corporate/business type messages are $200. They help us run our show and produce it. And it actually gives us an answer to the question our wives ask us every once in a while, which is like, you guys get paid for this, right? Occasionally we say no. More often than not we say no, but occasionally we say yes, thanks to our the generous contributions of our viewers. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
Damok, Angelad, Tanagra.
Guys, have you ever nicked your nuts trying to make yourself look better in the buff? Who hasn't? Look, you can be as careful as you can around there, but if you don't have the right tools, all it takes is one slip up to turn your bag of grapes into a slashed up mess. Do you want to go to the emergency room and explain to them what happened? Do you? Do you? I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. These tools are designed to do one thing and one thing well, trim the body hair in your most sensitive areas safely. The Lawnmower 5.0 is the latest bunch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads. A standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Spring cleaning doesn't just apply to the nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. If you've got a mom or a mother figure in your life, you know how hard it is to choose a gift to give them that says everything that you want to say. But maybe the goal should be to give them something that doesn't say anything at all, while at the same time saying 1,000 words. Because that's what pictures are supposed to do, right? That's a famous adage. Well, what if I told you that you could give this person in your life a gift that was infinity times 1,000 words? That's a limitless amount of pictures that play on a continuous loop on an aura frame. Because when you give an aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of pictures, you're giving them a story every time you send one to it. And it's so easy to do. You just open up the app, click on their aura frame, add a picture from your library, and in seconds, you're making your gift new again. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use that code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I did. In my viewing of this episode, I thought that Worf was the drunk Shimoda. This moment really stuck with me when Riker walks onto the bridge with Vash, and he's like clearly giving her a tour. And he walks over, and Geordi and Data are doing some science project in the corner, and introduces Vash to them. They're pretty polite, and then they turn around, and Riker introduces her to Worf, and Worf just stands there impassively without extending his hand to greet her, and turns to Riker and goes, "I didn't know we were bringing these people on board the bridge." It's so fucking rude.
He's a real dick.
He said that, like, two links up the chain of command to a guy that outranks him by two levels of rank. What the fuck is his problem? Doesn't Riker have leave to bring somebody on board the bridge?
Yeah, exactly. Worf is fucking moody the entire episode.
Crazy.
Get it together, Worf.
How about you? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
Yeah, I did. What we see in this episode is a developed female character in the name of Vash. Mm-hmm. She's interesting. She's smart and funny.
Multidimensional.
Multidimensional. This is her second episode that she's ever been on the show for, right?
Yeah.
And so we get her on the one hand. And on the other hand, we have our two female cast members who are in every episode. We have Deanna Troi and Beverly Crusher. Both of which get basically zero dialogue. Both of which, in the major fight scene at the very end, the crescendo of all the action, are not given swords to fight with.
No, they're
are not given weapons of any kind. Instead,
dropping potted plants on guys' heads.
Yeah, and the idea of giving our potted plant characters literal potted plants to drop on people is my Shimoda.
It would be like if you had them go through doors by slipping through the crack rather than the door opening because they're so two-dimensional.
Yeah.
That is the level of metaphor we're working with here.
It just felt unnecessarily cruel to two actors that we like. So that is my Shimoda for this episode, Ben.
Solid Shimoda.
Well, does it get any better from here? What are we watching for the next episode?
It does, Adam. The next episode is season 4, episode 21. The Drumhead.
The Drumhead.
A search for a spy aboard the Entrepreneur turns into a witch hunt in which Picard is implicated as a traitor. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Who could forget Dame Admiral Satie? I do remember this episode. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, this is one of, I would say, like one of the top classic episodes.
The best of the best.
Yeah, can't wait.
Wow.
You know what else I can't wait for, Adam?
What's that, Ben?
People to go and get a Drunk Shimoda shirt or a West Hot American Summer shirt for their loved ones for this holiday season, and people to go to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the show on an ongoing basis. We had a real nice thread on Facebook the other day on the Greatest Gen Facebook group about people talking about how good it made them feel to contribute to the production of this show, and I want to thank everybody that took part in that thread or took on a monthly donation because of that thread or increased their donation to MaximumFun.org because of that thread. It was a real treat and a bright spot on my week.
Yeah, and look, viewers don't just have to do it for us. They can do it for them because by becoming a supporter of the show, they're going to get some special content coming up in the coming months.
Yeah. So that is always super, super appreciated. Another thing that is appreciated is Adam Ragusea for much of our music and Dark Materia for our theme music. Thanks, guys. And thanks to everybody that uses the hashtag GreatestGen to talk to us on Twitter. Adam's at CutForTime. I'm at BenjaminAHR. And we're also on Reddit, greatestgen.reddit.com.
That's right.
We will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a drumhead tight episode of The Greatest Generation.
So tight.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.